the first thing it says is Messner Vetteri Burger Kirchen, the name. And then there was a chyron that came up and it said 31 employees, and then a little pause, and then up comes 31 computers. And this was the first 15 seconds of the pitch reel. And I remember seeing that. I was interviewing and they said, hey, you know, check out this pitch reel, get familiar with our work. So I'm watching this pitch reel and I see the 31 employees, 31 computers. And I was like, are you serious? 31? What would they do with 31 computers?
Early to bed, early to rise, eat right and advertise. Early to bed, early to rise. And one more thing, get your name out there.
Hello and welcome to Paleo AdTech. I'm Marty Kine.
And I'm Jill Royce, and we are the hosts of this podcast that looks at the first two decades of advertising and marketing technology.
From double click to double verify and everything in between.
Get your name out there.
So we're very happy to welcome Stephen Comfort to the show. Stephen currently provides go-to-market consulting for technology companies. He started life, as so many ed tech pioneers did, as a media planner for some agencies in the great city of New York, such as DMB&B and Havas Worldwide, from which he joined Wired Digital and Wired Magazine. He was a general manager of Wired Online during the critical period, 1994 to 1997, when the first browser ads appeared. In fact, Stephen himself is rumored to be the guy who placed the very first ad on the internet, something we'll be sure to ask him about in a moment. In the late 90s, he worked in San Francisco office of 24/7 Media under the legendary Dave Moore, who was the subject of our most recent and actually our most popular podcast episode. He then joined Yahoo and a number of other high-flying and sometimes maybe medium-flying media and content companies such as Monster, Nextag, Yumi, and Radius. So we'd like to start with a random personal question. Did you have a childhood dream career?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I grew up in inner city Baltimore in the 70s. As a kid, I was convinced that I was going to be a professional baseball player.
Number 27, right fielder, Vladimir.
I wanted to go to the strongest program that would have me, frankly. Carolina was the best team that was interested in me. And when I got there, the talent level was just so high. And after my sophomore year, the coach had an interesting way of giving me the news. He didn't say you're cut. He said, you know, we've got some great commitments, high school guys coming in, and all of them are going to pitch in front of you next year.
You're out!
All of them are better than me.
So fast forward, how did you make the leap into media planning and buying?
It was the late 80s, and I knew that I wanted to be in New York. And my grandfather had started an advertising agency in the 40s, right when he came back from World War II. And he went to Pratt in New York. He's like a real art director, like real talent. I didn't inherit any of that. So I knew that it was going to be the business side for me. And I thought, you know, one day I might work in the family business. I might, you know, end up working in his ad agency. And if that was the case, and I did enjoy the business as I observed it being practiced by my grandfather and his staff. But I thought, you know, if I ever work in the family business, so to speak, I don't want to just be this guy's grandson. I need to come in with my own expertise, with my own sort of resume that's not just like, oh, his grandfather started it.
Do you remember when you first kind of started the foray into digital, like what that first exposure was and what that was all about?
Well, just coming into the media department at DMB&B, that was a Proctor agency, and it was a big Proctor agency. It was a formal media training program, sort of like going to a college class. I mean, it was really like a crash course in broadcast TV, in cable, in print. But digital came later. So I started in 1989, and digital really came into its own with the web browser and Mosaic, and later Netscape was the outgrowth of that. So I had a good, you know, 4 or 5 years of, you know, pure traditional media before the web took off. But yeah, I remember the web chapter very clearly, and I was working for Messner Vetteri, the full name, which still makes people laugh. It was Messner Vetteri Burger Kerry Schmetterer, Euro RSTG, which
was funny.
Often shortened.
Shortened usually to Messner, sometimes Messner Vetteri. But then, I mean, later in that agency's life, Elaine McNamee replaced Carrie as the fourth partner. So terrific agency. And I was really lucky because I showed up there as the third person in the media department and the 30th person at the agency. And by the time I left sort of four years later, it was about 700 people. That was an amazing chapter that I think really taught me a lot about startups and about high growth environments, which has served me well in my life in San Francisco over the last 20 odd years. Messner, I remember pretty clearly when I started there, you know, you're always pitching a bit, you're usually pitching new business, and especially for a small agency. The cool thing about being a younger person in a smaller agency is what the tiny agencies do is they cut out the middle. So it's young people working directly with partners. And these are partners, you know, that have gone out on their own. They walked away from their cushy jobs at wherever big agencies they made, you know, made their careers, you know, put their own money on the line and went for it. I'm working side by side with these fantastic people. I mean, like people like Ron Berger are just, and Tom Messner, absolute top of the heap. And the pitch deck or the pitch reel, when we start the reel, the first thing it says is Messner, Viteri, Berger, Carrie, the name. And then there was a chyron that came up and it said 31 employees, and then a little pause, and then up comes 31 computers. And this was the first 15 seconds of the pitch reel. And I remember seeing that as I think I was interviewing, and they said, hey, you know, check out this pitch reel, get familiar with our work, and then you're gonna meet five people today. It was that kind of interview. So I'm watching this pitch reel and I see the 31 employees, 31 computers. And I was like, are you serious? 31? What would they do with 31 computers?
Seemed like a lot.
It was incredible. I was like, this is the most technologically forward agency it has to be in America. Everyone has a computer? That is unbelievable.
That's fantastic.
So it was a good fit for me because I was kind of a nerdy. I grew up with TRS-80 and I had the early PCs. My stepfather, after working in the steel industry for years as an accountant, started a accounting software company that he ended up selling years later that he was doing out of the basement. So when I got to Messner and all of a sudden it's all just Macs everywhere and everyone's all into it, I was like, wow, this is the right place for me. Because Messner was very tech forward, they were able to realize profits and higher margins in ways that other agencies couldn't even imagine. Because like they didn't have the stuff, right? Everybody didn't have a computer. They weren't pushing the envelope in terms of what can we do ourselves digitally versus paying someone else to do it.
And were you there when you started to actually have to think about buying and planning digital media?
I was. The question about did I sell the first online ad, the answer is no, but it's a people that know me. And know
people
that
do seem to think that though, Stephen.
I know. That it's a very, the reason for that is because I'm known in our industry for sales. And most people do not know that I was ever at an ad agency or that I was ever a media buyer and media planner. So it was actually on the planning and buying side that I got involved with the first web ad deal, which was Wired, the launch of Hotwired, which was their series of web properties. And I was in the right place at the right time. It really wasn't because we had computers at Messner, or it was just, there was a degree of luck to it. So the story is, I was tasked with writing an internal white paper at Messner, really so that the account leaders could reach for this white paper if they're talking to a client, to be able to explain any and all digital test grounds that were available. So the services like Prodigy, CompuServe, America Online, they existed and they were walled gardens, and they had, I think Prodigy had about a million people that used it. So these were digital ecosystems that were alive, but they were not interesting from an advertising standpoint. There was not much you could do. You could get some text on there. There was some stuff that you could do, but not very compelling, frankly. But a lot of the cable providers, and again, you know, cable is now in its first 10 years, it's about 9 years old at the time, maybe a little older. There were all kinds of video on demand trials. And it's funny, when I look at something like Netflix today, that's what they were imagining. So there were a lot of tests being done. A very famous one that Time Warner did was in Orlando, and they had about 5,000 households, and it cost more than $500,000 to participate as a advertising test partner and this kind of stuff. So there were some very real, you know, large, with many thousands of test users. We knew that there were these things going on, but we didn't have any kind of guidebook to them or any, you know. I heard about the Time Warner test. You know, how many households are in that? I don't know. How much does it cost? We'll find out. So I was tasked with like build a cheat sheet for the account team of all this stuff. So as I was putting this together, I was talking with all kinds of people, and some of the software developers that I was talking to about the project, two different men that didn't know each other, lived on separate sides of the country and doing different kind of work. Both of them told me about this project that Wired Magazine was going to do on the World Wide Web. I think one of them said the internet and one of them said the World Wide Web. I didn't know what they were talking about. But when I heard it the second time, when the second developer said just about the same thing as the first developer said, it's like, wow, this, what is this? Like, I need to figure out what this thing is. So I researched it. I figured out what the internet was. Never heard of that before. And then the web. And then in short order, the Mosaic browser becomes it's like wildfire. Like everyone's talking about it. Everyone, the young people like me who are really interested in computers and stuff, all Mosaic, Mosaic, Mosaic. So I check out Mosaic. And then that was kind of the aha moment where I was like, first of all, this is way more interesting than the Time Warner on demand, video on demand stuff. And it's way more interesting than all this, all the things you could do on Prodigy, CompuServe, et cetera. It's like, this is super interesting. Like I need to find out what this project is that Wired's doing. So like most media planning people, we had just tons of magazines all over the office. You know, we got every magazine delivered to us and the whole thing. So I hadn't paid any attention to Wired. I thought it looked kind of silly. It was always like electric purple or this wild design. And so I pick up a couple of issues of Wired, and I just started going through the masthead and looking for a name to pop out or someone that would make sense for me to call. And one title that really kind of got my attention. There was a guy whose name's Andrew Anker, who eventually became the CEO of Hotwired, and his title in the masthead of a magazine was CTO. I was like, "What? How can you be the CTO of a magazine?" So I just called him. I just called like the main number at Wired and asked to speak with him, and he answered the phone. I told him, I was like, you know, I work at an ad agency in New York. I'm doing this white paper on interactive media opportunities. We have several clients that are interested in doing interactive media stuff. And I want to talk to you about this project you're cooking up on the web. And there was just silence on the other end. And he's like, we haven't really announced anything. I said, well, and I heard it from, this is essentially the hacker community is where I got it from. And once he understood that I was like coming out of the hacker community, kind of, then he was fine about talking about it. What he didn't want is just to like talk about it with some random guy, advertising agency guy, called me on the phone. He really got me excited. And he set up a meeting for Jane Metcalf, who was the co-founder of Wired, to meet with me the next time that she was in New York, which I found out later was going to be to do the first sales pitches for Hotwired. So this uncovers the who really did sell the first ad, and it was Jane. So Jane came to New York a few weeks later. She met with big advertisers. We were not on the list initially. I had weaseled us onto the list through making the call. She showed me my first QuickTime video. If you remember the first time you ever saw something move around probably on your Mac, that was it for me. When she showed me that, it blew me away.
Well, prepare to have your mind blown.
When that sales call was over, I was not a decision maker that I could say on the spot, like, yes, I will say yes for this client. But I knew that we were definitely going to be able to sell this idea to somebody. It's one of our clients. So I was excited about that. But what I also remember about that sales call was she wasn't showing ads or saying, this would be your ad. And this is, she didn't show Hotwire because it didn't exist yet. But what she was doing is just showing me the web. I had a Mosaic browser, so I had been on the web. I had been to Yahoo, which I thought was the most interesting site on the web because it was an index of every site on the web. Like you could, from A to Z, you could just scroll down the one page and you could go to every single site on the internet, which was amazing. So Jane showed me just some beautiful photography that was on the web. And when you're sitting in there in your office, seeing the super high quality resolution, as a media person, you're like, wow, this is like luxury, fashion, high quality, high resolution print. Like this is really great stuff. Like this, all of the demands of a very heavily scrutinized print campaign could be realized in this media. And then, she plays some music and you're like, okay, that sounds really good. I wish my speakers were better, but I get it. Like you can do you can move sound. It's really actually a very thin file to move. And you can do this. You're like, all right, we got it all here. We got television. We've got potentially long form stuff. We've got news and information. We've got radio. We've got high quality print. This digital stuff, this World Wide Web, it's everything. It's everything. That meeting, that was a life-changing meeting for me because even though there was no web ads to show yet or web properties to put the ads on yet, all the ingredients were there. And you're just kind of like, oh, like this is going to be a media type. This World Wide Web thing is going to be its own category.
So was Jane describing any specific kind of ad units at the time? Was there any vision of a 250 by 300 or anything like
that? The designers of Hotwired just built an ad unit that fit their design. And there were several of them. The idea was really that an advertiser would sponsor an area of the site. And the site had different kind of content verticals. So there was one devoted to travel. There was one devoted to business news. There was one devoted to culture. And you would look for advertisers that kind of fit the section, so to speak. So that's as far as it got in terms of, how will advertising appear? There was a homepage that you had to go through and there were ads there. And then from the homepage, you could navigate to any of these vertical content sections. And when you chose one, travel, say, there was an advertisement at the top. And it wasn't even clear that if you click on it, anything would happen, that you would go to a website. It was not obvious. And I think even to our client, if they worked on the project, they knew that there was a website behind it because they had to build the website. But Volvo was one of the first advertisers that we brought in. And I'm sure that there were a lot of Volvo employees who, when they saw that, they had no idea that if you click on the ad, that something else was going to happen. You were going to go to a Volvo website. I mean, what we're sponsoring, it's right there. You can see the ad. What's, the idea of even interactivity was still kind of a new idea.
Was there a call to action though? Like click here? Learn more.
Yeah, AT&T. So our big, Messner's big client was MCI. I mean, Volvo, Club Med, they were large too, but MCI from a billing standpoint was larger. So all three of those clients were on Hotwired when it launched, but AT&T was also on, and their ad, which has been tallied incorrectly as the first digital ad, it said something to the effect of, have you clicked here before? You will.
You will, yes.
So they were the pioneers, or their agency, or whoever wrote that copy was the pioneers of, click here now, or, that all the clickability aspect of the medium.
You said they were incorrectly credited with being the first ad. So what was the first ad?
Well, I think you have to call it a 12-way tie. Because there were 12 advertisers and it all got turned on at the same time. So the idea that any of them was first, I think is going to be difficult to prove. It was all in Hotwired. Hotwired was the first on the web, but it didn't take long. I mean, I did the sort of insertion orders and the whole thing for the Hotwired buys, but I was also doing insertion orders for Vibe magazine, which they did a great website. They were one of kind of the first four or five commercial websites. Hotwired was the first, but let's call it first by a matter of weeks. I mean, I think within a month or two, you could have probably placed media on five or six websites. There was a lot of press interest around this thing, around this new category. And most of the stories were around, it's going to be one-to-one marketing, and this is the, ultra personalization, and it's kind of that kind of theme. But just the fact that the World Wide Web was a commercial place now was a big story. What was happening was the advertisers that were doing anything on any website, there were so few of them collectively. I mean, we're talking like 20 advertisers total, that they were the story. The story wasn't, Volvo was on Hotwired and their website traffic grew by 200% as a result or something. That wasn't the story. The story was Volvo is the first car company to advertise on the web. That's the story. That's the whole story. They're advertising on the web. We're like, oh my God, they are? How are they doing that? What is it? What is the web? What is it? What's going on? So it was all just about being in the club. So if you were a brand manager, you're like, we want to be on the web. Who do we buy it from? Oh, I have to build a website? What's a website? What do you do? What do we have to make? We have to make a website. How do you do that? Do we do that? Do you do that for us?
Did you measure click-through rates at that time?
The server software to do the kind of things that we wanted to do did not exist. We had to make it, we had to build it. So one of the things about Wired that is, there is this kind of symbiotic relationship with an upstairs neighbor in the same building where Wired is today on 3rd Street at Bryant in San Francisco. So Wired is on the 4th floor and Organic Online was on the 5th floor. So Organic was founded by Jonathan Nelson, who is the CEO of Omnicom Digital. And he was Wired's 6th employee when it was super, super young. He didn't think that Wired was going to make it. He thought they'd go out of business. So he wanted to start his own thing. So he started Organic with the idea that when advertising broke out on the web, the brands are going to need websites and they're not going to know how to build them. Mm-hmm. So he just got some HTML wizards, started this agency, Organic, and it played out exactly like he imagined it would, except that Wired didn't go out of business. So Jonathan was also very, very important in the pre-launch days of Hotwired in explaining to people like me how you could build a website and you could hire Organic if you want. We could work with your customer, we could work with your client. It was helpful because Wired and Organic had a lot of expertise around all things HTML, and they could see where the gaps were. For instance, server software does not exist. So the beginning of the Apache project, which is an open source server software, that started at Wired and Organic. So, when you think about things like reporting, we had to build sort of the foundations just to be able to serve it up. And things like ad performance and reporting, that's a walk in the park. It's so much easier than doing something like writing the server software so that you can show fancy fonts or whatever the need was to hack around at that level.
You ended up in San Francisco working at Wired and 24/7. Why did you move to San Francisco? Was that where the action was?
Yeah, I didn't. Wired's headquarters in San Francisco. When I was hired there from Messner, I worked in the New York sales office, which is founded by a guy named Doug Weaver, who's fantastic and is a mentor to me and taught me how to be a professional salesperson. A few years later, I got Jane and Lewis, the founders, called me and said, hey, we've got a job for you that would involve you running a group and you need to move to San Francisco. And I had no interest in moving to San Francisco. I thought it was a nice place, but I was very into New York and I just was not interested in leaving. So I said, no thanks. And about 2 weeks later, Lewis and Jane had John Battelle call me, who was the managing editor of Wired. And he really gave me the sales pitch on San Francisco and, you know, why I need to be there and how important it's going to be in my career and all this stuff. So I moved to San Francisco, and about 2 weeks after I arrived, I remember I was riding my bike through the Mission to Soma on a nice morning going to work. It was beautiful. And I was thinking, you know, if I was in New York right now, it was going to be cold. I'd be on the subway. I have a much bigger apartment here. It's sunny. I was like, wow, I almost did not come here.
Life is good.
It was super, super fun, especially in the media world that I was coming out of. Wired was really on fire. It was important. It was like an important thing to read. And Wired was the first magazine to kind of figure out, and from the beginning, that this whole computer digital stuff, it's not just bits and bytes. It's a culture. And the people that are creating software and creating the web, they're really smart, interesting people. And Wired made those people into like little famous, kind of little mini rock stars inside of the computer world. So one of the takeaways from a media planning and buying standpoint was the audience for tech stuff, whether it was the people who were on the web really early or the people who just read Wired and subscribed to Wired, they're wealthy people. It was expensive to be online. It was not like today. I mean, if you had an internet connection at work, you were somebody. Like it was like, whoa, you're on the internet? Like your company pays for that? The audience was very upscale and very attractive. So that was a plus, right? If anytime that you have those kind of demographics with a media type, you can charge a lot for that. And Wired was very premium priced.
Were you there for the dot-com boom years, or had you already gone to 24/7?
Yeah, no, I think Wired, certainly my time at Wired could be considered part of that. When you think about the boom years, I think about, you know, waste, and you think about like frivolous stuff. And I think about, you know, stupid companies that you can't believe like they could raise money, much less do an IPO. And, you know, I'll throw one under the bus. Like there's a company out here called Quokka. They went public around the world sailboat racing coverage and just coverage of these bizarre sports with really tiny audiences that no one else was touching, because I don't think, you know, there's no one dared to touch it. But there were just like crazy stuff getting built and getting funded and getting financed and hiring lots of people. I mentioned John Battelle, who convinced me to move to San Francisco. And when he left Wired, he started a magazine called the Industry Standard, which was a weekly. It was kind of a tech weekly. It celebrated startups for the most part, and it was super successful. Tons and tons of advertisers. They would have, and they were not far located, not very far from Wired. And every Friday, sort of at 5 o'clock, they'd have a rooftop kind of kegger kind of thing, and people would sponsor it. But if you went to the Industry Standard on any Friday, big beautiful roof, it was just kind of an open party. And you could like start your, you know, we're gonna go out on Friday night and we're gonna start it at the Industry Standard because we're gonna see lots of friends and stuff, and we'll find some people to go out with, and then we're going out. And there was a lot of that. There were lots and lots of startups, or still are. Most of them were in the South of Market, Soma area. So the fact that we're just kind of all around, it did have kind of a college type of feeling, because you're compressed the same way that a campus is compressed. And, you know, you knew that if you walk over to this part of South Park at lunch, that you'll probably bump into the people from such and such company or whatever. So it did kind of feel like college again. Thank you. The silly things like Quokka made it feel like a bubble, but Wired had won the National Magazine Award a couple of times. You know, looking at things like CNET and Industry Standard, we would have news crews coming from around the world all the time, all the time. We'd have Japanese media in our office like once a month. And all they'd be doing is like shooting us working and then talking about the web and, oh, they look, they're building the web and they're advertising on the web and all this kind of stuff. We didn't feel like we were contributing to the silly part of the bubble. We felt like we were, you know, quality. We had quality products. We were leading the way.